We are living in strange times, as we have a former president found guilty of crimes and may have to face jail. That's never happened before in our country. And as we look at politics, what do we do as Christians? Do we continue to stay involved, or do we pull back on this slice of fresh bread? Welcome to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church, Gainesville, with Pastor Brandon and Pastor Keith. Well, thanks for clicking on Fresh Bread. Fresh Bread podcast number 64. Fresh Bread, where we're bringing the truth of God's word to a starving world. I'm Pastor Keith. He's Pastor Brandon. And today we're going to discuss politics. And last week we had Donald Trump being found guilty on all 34 counts on his trial. And so I don't know, is he going to be in jail for the election, or will they sentence him after the election? But I thought what we talk about, Pastor Brandon, is as believers, as we see the world becoming more wicked, our vote, does it really change things? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If, let's say in November, and we're going to talk about this more as the election gets closer, what should Christians do? Let's say our president wins again. We know that things are not going to get better as far as believers go in the world. Should we kind of take a step back and just say, look, politics isn't going to solve the world? Do we just concentrate more on saving souls, teaching souls as far as equipping and pull back from the world a little bit? What do you think about that? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an excellent question, an excellent way to start this whole subject. I mean, as Christians, we are in the world but not of the world. There's that, we're citizens of a heavenly country. We're not, we are citizens in the world, but ultimately, as Christians, we become, we're now citizens of heaven, and this place isn't our home, right? I mean, it's not our home. And, the problem with politics is that it's, I would say, intrinsically centered on what's happening here now, like in this world. But on the other hand, as Christians, we are to be salt and light. Jesus talked about being salt and light in Matthew 5. And, so how are we to be salt and light, and how are we to engage the culture in being salt and light? And I will say, I mean, kind of as an initial thought, pulling out of the culture, completely would not be salt and light if we pull out of the culture, right? If we as Christians say, we're not going to engage in the culture because the culture has gone to a certain point that we can't participate, well, then we're just sort of giving the culture over. But I don't know that the Lord gives us that power to give a culture over. I think he does. I mean, I think he, Romans 1, he gave them over. I mean, he gives people, that idea that he gives them over to their passions, to their sin, and allows them to basically, that's his wrath, is just withdrawing his blessing. And his wrath on a culture begins that way. And I think ultimately, we saw in 1 Thessalonians 2 this past Sunday, that that there's a filling up of their sins. There's a point where God positively pours his wrath out on a nation, but I think that begins with him withdrawing blessing. So he can do that. He does that. But I don't know that he says that he. I don't think it. I don't see anywhere in Scripture where I can as a Christian can stop being salt and light. Mm-hmm. And to be salt and light, I have to be, recognize that I have to engage in what's happening in the culture. That doesn't mean I have to participate in the things of the culture. I don't have to. It doesn't mean that I, as a Christian, ought to go to bars and drink and party and all those things, or watch pornography because the culture is watching pornography, or, you know, those base things that the culture does. I don't need to participate in that way. No, I need to be salt and light. I need to be something different in being salt, which has a preserving effect on the culture, which hopefully slows down the decay of the culture. I need to be light to the culture that's producing, you know, this is how God would have us live. But I do that by being and understanding that I'm in surrounded by the culture. I'm just not being shaped by the culture, I guess is what I'm not being shaped in a negative way, at least by the culture. So the short answer is no, I don't think that we're called to withdraw. I think we're called to engage.
Okay.
But we have to engage in a way that we are salt and light.
But that's not something we fight for, right? We fight for the gospel.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I think as Christians, we have to fight for what's morally right before God. I mean, so as an example, if the nation is, you know, an ungodly nation that's killing babies, right? I do need to fight against that because that's morally wrong. It's morally wrong, but let me just say it's stronger. It goes against what God, you know, his law, right? God's law says, thou shalt not kill. And I think as a Christian, we ought to fight for his law to be upheld. It's interesting because I can't make people worship the one true God. I can't make them do that. But I think that we ought to fight for a system that allows for that, that allows for us to be able to share the gospel, you know, to be able to engage people with the truth of the one true God. And I think we ought to be willing to fight for those freedoms to do that. So yes, I mean, there, you know, the question is, I mean, I don't need to disengage politically. I need to recognize that politics, that God is the one who is, you know, put those people in power, and that he's the one who has the wisdom in how things ought to, you know, the world ought to be. And I need to engage at that level and hopefully have influence as salt and light so that people will come to, you know, that people will come to understand his wisdom.
As we look at our world society, there seems to be a dismantling of what God has established. We look at the family, we look at women, we look at children. There has always been certain guidelines and rules that society has lived by, you know, mostly protecting children, mostly, you know, taking care of women and protecting them. But we see now feminism, we see this transgenderism reaching out to young kids. We see drag queen story hours at the library for children. All this stuff done to confuse them and cause them to have more openness to sin. So you mentioned this to me one time, this book that was the Benedict Option. I want you to talk about that, but that's a way of looking at the world. As Christians, with all this stuff coming at us, like I said, we pull back. We have our own little area where we protect those values. We protect the way God has designed it. I'm not sure it's going to work, but it was an interesting, when I looked at the book, it was an interesting hypothesis, right? This guy, this Benedictine monk or whatever came up with.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about a little bit of that? Because that's an interesting...
Well, I think the concept is that we, you know, we pull back from the culture and create our own culture, you know, that sort of a if you will, a subculture.
So like an Amish kind of?
Yeah, I think the Amish would be in that sort of model of pulling back and not engaging with the culture, you know, living in a subculture where we're, you know, focused on those who are part of the, you know, that culture. You know, and the problem is that, you know, Christ said in Matthew 28, go forth and make disciples of the nations, right? I'm commanded to preach the gospel to the nations. And so when I pull back out of the culture in that way, then I'm no longer salt and light. I'm no longer, you know, to the culture. I'm no longer evangelizing. I'm now pulling back and I'm creating a subculture. And I don't think that that's what the Lord would call us to do. I don't think that. I do think that creating strong community within the Christian culture is important. And I think that that is a, right now in the world that we live in, that we've become so independent in, you know, families and individuals who are in, they're growing, they're independent from other people, right? And so that's happened because we have grocery stores and we are able to get all that we need, you know, get our groceries from the grocery store. We have hardware stores. We're able to get our hardware and our lumber from a hardware store. I don't need you, right? I don't need you to survive. I'm depending upon those things in order to survive. And so I bring that up to say, I think at some level we have to get back as a culture to depending upon one another as Christians, right? We need to build communities that can withstand, you know, the onslaught of the culture, you know, that there very well may come a time when we can't depend upon being able to do commerce, you know, that we can't depend upon, you know, being able to procure the goods that we need to survive because, you know, you have already social credit scores and things like that China's doing it, but I know the infrastructure is there or getting closer to being there, you know, even in the United States, and we see how fast technology is going anyway. It very well could come to a point where in order to buy and sell in our, you know, in order to have to do commerce, you have to have a certain social credit score. And, you know, you can definitely see that moving in that direction. And so as Christians, we definitely need to have strong communities that will help us survive that will help us survive as that pressure continues to increase. But I don't think that we as Christians ought to be withdrawing from the culture, that we still need to be engaging. We still need to be working to be salt and light. And, you know, to the culture that we live in, we still need to be evangelizing. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, it's funny because the whole Christian nationalism debate that's out there, you know, we've talked about it on a few occasions. And, you know, I think that there is a strength there that, you know, where, you know, I think that we do need to call our nation to follow, you know, the one true God. I do think that we need to be engaging our nation in that way. I do think that we should be striving for this to be a Christian nation. I do think that's right and good. At the same time, I think we need to recognize that right now the pendulum is swinging. The pendulum has swung and we're more of a secular nation. And that means that as Christians, we do need to have Christian community. We need to have stronger churches. We need to see church as being like the synagogue was for Israel, that our church is the center of life in the Christian community, that, you know, we are supporting one another. We don't just come together on a Sunday to worship, you know, but it's life together, you know, borrowing from Dietrich Bonhoeffer's book, you know, I think it's called Life Together, but we're building that life together. You know, there's a fellowship, there's a support that's there, but at the same time, we're not withdrawn from the culture. We're still engaging the culture and with the gospel, and we're still salt and light to the culture as much as we possibly can be. But we recognize that the solution is not a political solution directly, but it's a solution of growing strong community, strong Christian community, so that we can have the influence in the culture that God would intend for us to have.
Do you think that we could be looking back in history, ever get to the point where, like in Germany with the Jewish people, they kind of pulled back and were their own community, and then the Germans clamped down on them tighter and tighter, yes, and tighter until they took them to camps and tried to, yes, do away with them. Do you see that ever coming, that could be coming to Christians?
Well, it's proven that it's happened over and over in history. I mean, so history repeats, and so I think the short answer is yes, it can happen. And so I think that we do need to have, you know, strong community. Because if you think about it, I mean, even with the Jewish people and what they went through, and, you know, within Germany, I think it was community that actually helped them get through, right? I think it's the only way. We're not going to get through this if things continue to go from bad to worse, if things continue to slide in the way they're going, we're not going to get through this by trying to stand on our own, right? We're going to get through it by being community. So yes, I mean, being community made them a target because of that, it made Christians, early Christians, a target when, you know, under Roman rule and some of the persecution that happened there. Becoming a community makes them an easier target in that sense, but it also makes them more resilient. And because we have community. So even though we're more of a target, even though potentially they're going to use that against us, it still makes us more resilient overall.
You think there's a reason why Christians and Jewish people are more persecuted than Muslims or any other religion?
Well, I mean, for sure. I mean, because I think that Jewish people and, you know, and I think that obviously they serve the one true. I mean, they are worshiping Yahweh. Now, you know, obviously secular Jews are worshiping a god in their own image, and even Jews that are Orthodox are worshiping a god in their own image. But they are, I mean, Yahweh has, they are his people, right? And so I think that they are a target of you know, Satan and the demonic realm, if you will. They are a target because God sees them, or because they are God's people. But I think the church is the same thing. I mean, we serve the one true God. We serve the Lord Jesus Christ, the true Messiah, Israel's Messiah, and our Messiah. And so yes, I do think that there's a similarity in the persecution that, you know, that it's Satan that's persecuting God's people, you know, and so I think that is exactly what we see. He's trying to eradicate God's people, right? And he knows Scripture better than we do. He knows what God has said. I mean, he knows it. So there's no doubt that he knows that the Jewish people, that Christ is going to return, and his purpose is for the Jewish people to reign with him, you know, as you know, in the church as well. But the Jewish people, I think there's going to be in the millennial kingdom, you know, that he's going to, when Christ comes to reign, he's going to have the Jewish people reigning with him, Israel reigning with him. And, you know, where Paul says all Israel will be saved, I think there's going to come down to a remnant that reigns with Christ in the millennial kingdom. And I do think that Satan knows that, and he's trying to thwart it because he knows that, you know, the end is coming. I mean, he wants to thwart that, no different than he was trying to thwart, you know, Christ's purpose in the garden, in the wilderness during his temptations. I mean, he was trying to change the what is actually going to happen, you know, what God's plan is. So yeah, I do think that Satan is trying to eradicate and wipe God's people off the map. I mean, I think that's what he wants, because he wants his own way.
So Satan is trying to set up a kingdom.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's trying to counterfeit everything that God is doing, right? He wants to set up his own kingdom. I mean, God is going to ultimately set up a kingdom, and he's going to rule the new heaven and new earth. But you know, Christ is going to rule, but Satan is, it's the counterfeit. Satan is trying to do exactly what God has promised to do, because he's making himself to be God, right? That's the,
yeah,
that's his big sin.
Yeah. So if let's say Christians pull back, would that hurry his, would that bring his kingdom sooner? Or if we, like you say, if we stay engaged politically, like we have Christians in office, there's got to be a few in there still.
Sure.
That will slow it up a lot, right?
You know, what's interesting, yes. I mean, I do think what's interesting as pastors and as churches, I don't think we need to be focused on getting, you know, getting the next sheriff elected that's, you know, that's our guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to be, I think we need to be sharing the gospel. I think we need to be discipling people and discipling men and women, and we need to be having children, you know, and we need to do the things the church needs to do. And in doing so, I think that people who are in positions that the Lord puts into positions, to have influence in government are going to have that influence. So, you know, if I'm discipling, let's just say, you know, Larry shows up at my church and I'm preaching the gospel, Larry becomes a Christian, and Larry, I disciple Larry, Larry becomes committed, you know, a committed Christian who has a good understanding of the Christian faith and theology. Well, Larry becomes the next sheriff, right? I mean, that's the way it should, that's the process. You know, Larry becomes the next sheriff, and Larry begins to rule, you know, as the sheriff, he rules as a sheriff in a Christian way, and he has influence in the Christian culture that way. I don't necessarily need to, you know, as a pastor, it's not my goal. I don't have a goal to make sure the next sheriff is a Christian, right? That's not my goal. My goal is to make sure that the gospel is proclaimed, that people are being discipled, that people are growing in Christ, and that they're now going out and engaging in the culture, preaching the gospel, that they're doing the things that they need to do in the culture, being salt and light. And if they become, you know, if they end up being professors at the university, if they end up being in administration at the university or in the medical field or in the sheriff's department, I've done my job, right? I'm equipping that person, and I'm teaching them, and they're engaging in the culture, and they're being salt and light in the culture, and I've done what God has called me to do. Like I don't need to set my sights on, oh, we need to get the next sheriff needs to be a Christian, and we need to put our guy in there, and the next president of the university needs to be a Christian, and we need our guy in there. No, I don't need to do that. The Lord will take care of that. What I need to do is be faithful to preach the gospel and teach and disciple and have them then and encourage them to engage, to encourage them to take their Christian walk into those places so that they become sheriffs, so they become presidents, so they become whatever, so that they can lead the nation in a way, lead this county, lead the state, lead the nation in a way that would be pleasing to the Lord.
Is it even possible now for a Christian to be elected to an office or to be a sheriff, like of Gainesville or whatever?
Well, I think it's difficult because on one side there's a secularism that forces us not to talk about our faith. There's a tendency to say you can't talk about your faith publicly, but on the other side, there's this militant attitude is what I'm trying to get at as a Christian, that I'm going to be militant in my attitude in terms of it's kind of the whole that's really the issue that I have kind of with Trumpism. I mean whether you like Trump or you don't like Trump, or whether you're wherever you stand with Trump, I do have an issue with some of the militant, like it's all about Trump. I mean, I see these things about Trump being, you know, he's like, you know, they compare him to the Messiah. They compare him to Jesus. I mean, I've seen the memes where they, you know, the Jesus was convicted in a, you know, kangaroo court kind of idea. And so that's the parallel. And Donald Trump is a kind of a Messiah like figure. I struggle with that, right? I don't think we should be doing either. I don't think we should be falling for the secularism, but at the same time, I don't think we should be seeing, you know, like politics as, and we should be seeing someone like Donald Trump being a Messiah-like figure. I don't know, you know, in terms of your question, how to specifically answer your question. I think that as Christians, we ought to be walking like Christ. We ought to be imitating Christ, you know, Ephesians 5, the 4-5, where Paul talks about, you know, basically our responsibility as Christians, you know, and then you get into chapter 4, he's talking about walking in integrity. I mean, he's talking about being, you know, what it looks like to be a Christian, you know, being in unity with one another, you know, understanding how God has put the body of Christ together. You get into chapter 5 and he talks about being husbands and wives, and he talks about being employees, he specifically slaves. I think we should be living out the Christian walk in that way. And I think the Lord is going to put us in positions where he can use us, right? If I'm faithful to be doing what the Lord is calling me to do, Ephesians 4, 5, and 6, and if I'm faithful that way, he's going to put me in positions, he's going to put Christians in positions of influence and in positions that they, you know, he's the one who would choose that, you know, this person is on the path that I have him on is he's going to become the sheriff of Alachua County or, you know, and the path I have this person on is they're going to become the president of the university. It's not that we need to set out to make sure that we put people in those positions. It's that we need to train people and we need to call people to walk according to the Lord and his will. And that is going to have, those things are going to happen, right? I don't have to, it is a difficult, if you think about it, as a Christian right now in this world, can a Christian be a president? Can a Christian be the president? And if I looked at it in one sense, the answer would be no. Like because in order to fight your way to the top, you have to cheat, lie, and steal. You know, it seems to be the only way that's going to happen. But then I think that's taking away from the Lord that he uses people the way he's going to use them. And for whatever reason, in whatever way, he can take someone who's faithful and put them where he wants them, right? He's going to put them and he's going to plug them in where he wants them. And I don't have to plot to make that happen. I don't have to, obviously if I'm in a position where I have to make decisions. So if someone is going to run for president, they have to make that decision to run for president. But the Lord is going to be the one who shapes and fashions and makes it possible one way or the other, whatever they do. I mean, I'm a pastor. You're a pastor. We didn't choose to be pastors. I mean, ultimately, the yeah. Lord is the one who put us in this position. We made choices along the way, you know, when we were given that choice that, you know, this we go this direction or we go that direction. But ultimately, he's the one that put us there. I don't have to plot to make those things happen.
I always wanted to ask you this. You're from Arkansas. Mike Huckabee, I don't know a lot about him, but he was a pastor, was he not? And then yes. Ran for governor.
Yeah, I don't remember his exact path, if governor was the first. But he was a pastor. He was a Baptist pastor there in Arkansas.
So would you ever consider running for governor of Florida?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think if the Lord were to, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't see that happening. Okay, so let's just answer it that way. But I will say that, you know, I don't have a problem with there could, if the Lord's purpose was to make me governor of Florida, that he would be able to shape and fashion that the path is already laid out that he's already that okay. I would walk in. So
that's where I was going, because I was wondering, how does a pastor go from pastor to governor and then run for president?
Yeah.
It's yeah. such a weird.
It is a weird.
I just wondered what you thought about that. As pastors, I think we need to, if this is what we're called to do.
Yes.
But like you said, maybe there are different paths. Maybe Huckabee was there. I need to know more of his backstory, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny, I'm from Arkansas, but he actually came.
He was there before, after you left.
Yeah, maybe. After I left Arkansas, he rose to power. And so I don't know as much about him other than what I know nationally, that I know he was from Arkansas and I know he was a pastor, but I don't know, you know, in terms of faithfulness, I don't know where he was at. You know, he says a lot of great things, and I've always admired him politically. I don't know spiritually.
Yeah, where I don't stood. Know if he's. I don't know where he stands on that either.
Yeah, but. I don't. I'm not saying that the Lord would never make a pastor, you know, like a legitimate pastor, a politician, you know, put him in office. But it's certainly not my wouldn't be something that I would choose to do. But yeah. But like I say, I'm not. There could be a situation where, you know, that happens. I mean, and I'm not even saying it couldn't happen in my own life, but that's certainly not my intention.
This is kind of a weird question. Some people said it could happen. What about let's say in November, either Trump is prevented from running or he runs and there's just all kinds of, you can see, you know, it's a Biden landslide. He wins, you know, 45 states, which... Everyone would be like, that's impossible. What's going on with the voting? And then there's some kind of a insurrection where civil war, people have said something like that could be on the horizon. Would Christians join in that? Would they join the fight? Or is that something that we would pull back and say, let the Lord sort it out?
Yeah, I think, Keith, I think we need to study history better, more, because I think Christians have been in this position at other times in history. I mean, I know for a fact, even in our own nation, you know, there was a Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. There are different opinions on whether that was biblical or not. John MacArthur has a stance that it was not biblical, that they should have submitted to the king, and they were wrong for declaring independence and fighting it out. But the point is that there've always been in any of these conflicts, there's always been Christians on both sides. You know, like the Revolutionary War, there were Christians in England. There were Christians here that went with, you know, the other side that believed the other side was right. And Christians have always had, you know, anytime there's a conflict, you're going to be caught up in that conflict, and you're going to have to make a judgment based on your own conscience and understanding of which side of that conflict you're going to stand on. I don't know, you know, it's going to be, I mean, obviously standing neutral. I mean, you're going to have to make a decision in your heart. If it comes to that, right, you're going to have to make a decision in your own conscience where to stand, and whether that's being neutral or whether that's standing on one side or the other. We could be very well faced with that. And I know, and we are going to be very well faced with churches splitting over these things. And, you know, churches going two different directions and, you know, like denominations splitting over it. And yeah, I mean, these situations are definitely very difficult. And again, that goes back to Keith making sure we have a good, solid, strong Christian community. That's what's been on my heart. That's, you know, it's funny because in good times, you know, we talk about the church and we talk about the importance of the church. We talk about how we need the church to grow. And that's all very, very, very true. But what I'm coming to realize as this thing slides further and further, what seems to be further and further toward conflict, whether it's conflict in the sense of military conflict or whether it's conflict just in culture, which is where we are now, I'm beginning to see more and more the importance of the church, even in that context, that we have these strong church communities that can pull together, that can help each other, you know, through these things and protect each other, and even to the point of, you know, providing goods and services for one another when you can't get them in the culture, you know, out of the community at large, you know, whether it be because of conflict or whether it be because of not being able to engage in the culture that way. We need these strong Christian communities. But I think that you're going to have to follow your conscience in terms of what side you stand on, or if you stand neutral completely, you know, in the conflict.
Do you think there's ever a point, well, we kind of brushed on this, but is there ever a point where the society becomes so wicked, it keeps encroaching that we have to do the Benedict option?
Well, yeah, I mean, if the society puts enough pressure on us, then you're going to have to withdraw to a certain degree. I mean, it's just out of necessity for survival that you have to withdraw to survive. I don't think that should be our stance, like in terms of, like, we should see ourselves as being, you know, a separate community or a culture within a culture in the sense of completely withdrawing on purpose. But I do see that if culture puts enough pressure on us, that we are going to be forced to do that just to survive. Right. And I do think we'll survive. Obviously, the church, I mean, Christ promises to build his church. And that doesn't mean, you know, except for this situation or that situation, Christ will build his church even through, you know, great difficulty. And matter of fact, I think the church would even be stronger, you know, that would become stronger. If we are forced by the culture, if we're forced to build stronger community, you know, stronger fellowship in the church, if we're forced to put aside minor differences, you know, minor choices and things, and now I'm forced to embrace someone that obviously doctrine still matters, you know, even in those situations. So I wouldn't separate, I wouldn't, embrace someone who, you know, as an example, a Mormon, you know, I wouldn't embrace them in terms of that. But at the same time, you know, I might buy chicken eggs from a Mormon, right?
Yeah.
Because they're going to, you know, because they're going to stand similar to where I am in terms of the culture. And so I might buy eggs from them. It doesn't mean I'm going to embrace them doctrinally, but I'm definitely going to, I'm in those situations, in order for survival, I'm going to embrace, you know, and more some of those minor differences. And I'm not saying Mormonism is a minor difference, but I'm saying some of those minor differences I'm going to begin to put aside and say, look, we need to lock arms, you know, and protect one another. And I think that that's potentially coming. I mean, I think that's something that we potentially could have happen.
So moving forward, coming up as the summer goes into the fall, and we, as Christians, we are to be engaged still politically.
Yes.
We're going to vote.
Yes.
And if things continue to go south, we continue to share the gospel.
Yes.
And if it gets really, really, really bad, we kind of pull back.
Well, I think yeah.
Is it like withdrawing and regrouping or withdrawing?
No, I'm just saying, I don't think we need to think of it in terms of pulling back and withdrawing. I think we need to think of it in terms of building Christian community.
Okay.
That our churches need to be strong. You know, for us, it's Grace Bible Church, right? We're, mm-hmm. That's the church that the Lord has given for us to oversee. And so for us, it's really in encouraging our people to continue to build strong community within Grace Bible Church. If things continue to go further and further, then maybe it's reaching out to other churches that are like-minded and trying to you know, build a larger community of Christians within Gainesville, you know, where we can help each other, you know, because there's more of us, and you know, where, you know, minor things, that minor doctrinal differences or minor church philosophy differences are put aside, in the sense that, you know, that we are using, you know, and really we should be doing that anyway. We should be help, you know, engaging one another, especially that where we're like-minded in terms of Christian doctrine. Maybe we have slight differences in eschatology or slight differences in church philosophy of ministry and that sort of thing, but they have generally the same beliefs that we do in terms of Christian, you know, who Christ is and salvation and that sort of thing. And so I don't want to be, yeah, I mean, that's sometimes an uncomfortable thing for us and who we lock arms with, but I think I think that necessity is the mother of invention sometimes, and I think that necessity may push us to you know, embrace one another even more in terms of the Christian community. But for you and I personally, like for us as pastors, as overseers of the body of Christ at Grace Bible Church Gainesville, we need to be preaching the truth. We need to be encouraging our people to have a greater community. I'm not saying that we need to pull back. I don't think that that's the answer. I think that naturally, if the pressure is increased, that naturally we're going to kind of be pushed back, and you know, that's going to happen. But I don't think we need to like say we're going to put a stake in the ground, and we're going to start pulling back right now, and we're going to disengage from the culture. We're going to start building our own farms. We're going to start building our own schools in the sense of which we should be doing those things. But that's part of the community. That's part of being a strong Christian community, is having schools that we can depend upon, having churches we can depend upon, having people who know what they're doing and you know, different things, different marketable skills that we can depend upon, you know, getting our cars fixed, getting computers done, taken care of, things like that. I think that's important to begin to have that community in that way.
You mentioned eschatology. How important is it for like Grace Bible Church that we decided we were going to teach a little more eschatology, not to lose hope, but to give them hope of this all that's happening is not something out of the ordinary?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's high time that we see eschatology as an important doctrine. Like, I think it's critical that we are engaging in eschatology and seeking to know and understand what God has promised, right? I'm not looking for the day and the time, you know, no one knows the day but the time but the Father, but he does tell us that we can know the seasons. Like, we can look at the clouds and we can see there's a storm coming in, You know, that we ought to be able to look at the culture. We ought to be able to look at what's happening and have some sense of where we are on that eschatological time clock. And you know, I think it is important that we know and have a hope for what's coming in the future, and that we have a general idea of what God has promised. And I think that gives God's people hope. And, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, it always seems to descend into a tit for tat. It always seems to be this competition about who's right and who's wrong in terms of eschatology. We just need to seek to understand and know what the Lord has promised, and find encouragement in that. It's funny because 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians, we're kind of going through that in our equipping hour. He keeps coming back to the hope of Christ coming. That's the hope. That's the hope that Christ is going to come, that Christ is going to make things right, that, you know, and he keeps bringing that back to that. And I think that's how, even today, as we see, you know, President Trump, you know, that you know, getting convicted, you know, and no matter where you stand on that, I mean, it's distressing. If you're a pro-Trump or you're against Trump, it doesn't matter. It's distressing that, you know, he's a professor at TMU. Dr. Varner posted now my choice is I have to vote for either a guy that kills millions of babies, or I have to vote for a guy that's been a convicted felon. I mean, that's the two choices I have. And he's frustrated about it. And I feel his tension. I feel the frustration, you know, that he has. But I think going back to the eschatology, I think it's important as Christians that as leaders in the church, you and I are pointing to a greater hope. That my hope isn't found in whether Biden or Trump wins in November. And oh, by the way, I don't think either one of them are going to be president in November, starting in November. That's my prediction on Fresh Bread right now.
Wow.
I don't think either one of them will be president. I think the Democrats are going to figure out some way to get somebody else in besides Biden, but I don't think that they're going to allow Trump to win. And whether it's election interference or whether it's something that's created, you know, as a diversion, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think something major is going to happen that's going to prevent Trump. You know, it could be assassination. It could be that he's in jail, you know, that they've got him in jail. It could very well be that he's in jail and he gets Epstein'd. You know, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be. And I'm not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet. I don't think that he's going to be president. I don't think Trump's going to be president. I don't think Biden's
either
gonna
one.
Be,
huh?
I don't think either one of them.
This is June. We're recording this.
Yes.
In June of 2024. Yeah. So yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. I think something's going to happen. Something big. That's going to change the whole trajectory of it.
And that's why I asked about the Civil War part. But if something that big happened, I mean, that's going to really do something to the country that, you know, we talk about change, things changing so much that wouldn't that spark something of some kind of riot? Or we have riots on the left. We don't have a lot of riots on the right. But if let's say if Trump is, let's say, assassinated or something horrible like that, and a Democrat becomes president again, don't you think the right, we talk about the right wing, I'm making air quotations, those people will do something?
Yeah, I think that, well, January 6th is a great example, right? I think that January 6th, that some good people made some bad decisions. They were influenced by some bad people. And, you know, I think that there were people that were kind of caught in the crossfire of, you know, I honestly think, based on what I've seen, that they opened the Capitol up and sort of invited them in.
Yeah.
And there were some bad operators in there that were instigating it on both sides, right and left.
Yep.
And I think that what we as Christians need to recognize is that could very well be what happens, a January 6th style, something to instigate some sort of uprising that has to be put down, that would then lead to some sort of martial law, which would then, since, you know, we have a Democratic president, leads to him staying in power and then potentially a transfer of power within the Democratic Party. I mean, I it could very well be something like that. You know, so if you think about it, the mechanisms are in place in terms of if something happens, you know, to have some sort of martial law situation where they would suspend the election, and you know, that very well could be the what happens. I mean, as Christians, we just need to be wise and not get drawn into, you know, that sort of the sort of fervor. And I'm afraid there's a lot of people who call themselves Christians who will get pulled into it, and they're going to potentially, I say they, those who are instigating would use that, and it could be a bad situation.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, as Grace Bible Church, I mean, we need to be wise, you know, wise as serpents, gentle as lambs. You know, we need to be those kind of people who recognize, what's out there and what's happening. We need to be wise in who we are and how we respond.
So how much did it change the political landscape with Donald Trump being found guilty?
Well, I think even him being on trial was problematic. Yeah. Like all these trials that are happening is problematic, that the charges are trumped up. No, I don't know for sure, you know, like the whole, you know, Stormy Daniels and hush money and all of that, you know, I don't know. It seems, you know, people that I trust that understand legally, you know, that I trust in what they say legally, it sounds like that Trump didn't do anything wrong, legally. I mean, that he was within his rights to pay her and, you know, to give her money to not take the case. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's admitting guilt. You know, that he very well could have just understood that it's easier to pay somebody some money to get them to not bring the false charge, even though it's false. I don't know if I want to wade too far into that, but it is interesting that he's being tried by political opponents. And I think that's what's problematic, that it's political opponents. It's Biden and it's the Department of Justice that's pushing this. And that's where, and I think the framers of our Constitution would have wanted to avoid that, you know, where if there was a crime, that person would be tried, you know, in a completely independent way. And you cannot say, you know, that was what happened. I mean, that is not what happened. Like he didn't get a jury of, you know, of his peers that were neutral. Like the jury that heard this case was not neutral. I mean, I don't know who would be able to even, I mean, the judge was not neutral. I mean, and there was no neutrality there. So you can't say that he got a fair trial. And so I think we descended into the realm of being a banana republic by what we, you know, by that, you know. You know, there's a question mark as to whether or not what he did was legal, you know, and so, and you put this trial together and it's obvious it's political. I mean, even if you're just a neutral observer, it's political. And so, yeah, I think what happened with Trump last, you know, by bringing him to trial and especially by finding him guilty in the way they did, I think it's very problematic for our republic. And it's one of those things that you see this happening in real time, and it's like a sand in an hourglass, and you see that sand running out, and it's like when I see the sand actually run out, it's like, did I really see that? Did I really see? Did they really find him guilty? Did that really happen? And then, you know, then you got the next thing that happens, and it's like, did that really happen? And we just all along, the sand is running out of the hourglass. I mean, all along, we're going further and further, and things that we could never imagine. Could, you know, 10 years ago, could you be able to look forward to see the things that are going on right now?
Yeah, we're seeing firsts happening all over.
Every day, almost.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. Is it things that you never imagined would happen is happening. And, you know, I think that's part of why people, a lot of good people, I mean, I say good people, but a lot of people who are fairly neutral, I think they're incredulous, like, that can't be true. Like, the Democrats couldn't have influence the election. You know, they couldn't have used mail-in ballots to influence the election and sway the election, because who would do that, right? Yeah. It's such a it seems like it's so far out there for what we have as an ideal as a nation. We have this ideal of the United States being this virtuous nation that would never, we would never fall to that level. And yet it's happening. Like it's, you know, it, you know, January 6th happened and the election happened and, you know, we now put, we put a former president on trial. That happened. It's done. He's found guilty. It's, that's happened. I mean, it's unprecedented what we're seeing. And I think people are just having a difficult time processing it all. And yeah, and it's just a, you know, as Christians, we have to be, again, we have to be wise. And it certainly seems like that it's just, yeah, there's just so many things going on, you know, from, you know, things like the Great Reset, you know, that, that, you know, economically, the things that's happening, climate change, we talked about last time, you know, our last podcast, you know, now Trump's trial and what's happening there. I mean, we're talking about any one of those things is a major thing, but all of these things are happening in concert. All of these things are happening together, like one thing after the other. And it's almost as if somebody's actually planning all this. And you know, and so if you're a conspiracy theorist, I guess you say there is somebody planning all of it. And it's hard to deny that, that that's what's happening. If there's anything that anything that you get out of this, I would say that we need to be cognizant of building strong Christian community within Grace Bible Church. I mean, specifically, this is a Grace Bible Church podcast, but also as Grace Bible Church, being recognizing that we need to be a part of a strong Christian community, you know, in Gainesville and really around the state of Florida and also outside of Florida, that there just needs to be a strong Christian community to help one another as we go through this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we don't need to withdraw from the culture, right? I don't think that's, we need to be salt and light in the culture, but we need to recognize that we're going into some unprecedented times in all that's going on and that we need to be pulling together as Christians to help one another.
And we vote on November 5th, even we just trust the Lord. I don't know if it'll make a difference, but
well,
if they change our votes. And
sure,
but
sure.
We stay engaged.
Yes. Absolutely.
We stay in the front lines.
Yeah, knowing what, you know, understanding what's going on, you know, being wise and understanding, you know, that understanding that, you know, that things that we have evil men that are in government and they're doing evil things and that shouldn't surprise us. I mean, it shouldn't surprise us that what we see and it shouldn't surprise us that things are going, you know, proceeding from bad to worse. I mean, that's what the Lord has promised. It shouldn't surprise us, and we just need to engage where we can, and you know, build strong Christian community, and you know, protect one another, and you know, proclaim the name of Christ throughout the whole thing, and proclaim that you know this goes back to the Christian nationalism thing. I think we absolutely need to proclaim that the governor and the you know, the sheriff, and we need to proclaim that they are under the rule of the Lord. That even if they're not Christians, they still will stand accountable to Him for what they've done, and they are accountable to Him, and hold them accountable that way.
Yeah, that's good. Good way to end it. Do you want to come to the shooting range with me later?
Let's go.
All right.
Just don't shoot me.
I can't guarantee that. Is this a safety? Is there like some kind of safety switch on? I'm not a great shot.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church Gainesville. For more information, go to gracegainesville.org. And thanks for listening.